Oh, welcome, friends. I see you are all very intelligent. Oh, staying away from the sun, the light. I mean, that's the light. Actually, it will kind of go away in about another half an hour. But this is the time that the angle just come through here. But you it's comfortable, right? Good. Okay. Well, that's why I also had the podium on this side too. Like, I'm just kidding. Thank you for coming, and especially coming on time. And this is one of the kind of presentation in our church. And of course, Professor Scoble gave us a sort of a preview already 2 weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago, when he shared in our fellowship group. But tonight, this afternoon, we have this time set aside for our very own Joe, and to give us a presentation of his current progress in terms of his research in this very unique arena, and then of course, in many ways, you know, we Chinese Christians are. Of course, we owe it all to our Lord, but the Lord uses, and throughout generations, all kinds of people, and especially missionaries, and in various fields that went to China, and also other parts of the world where we have Chinese people, and all over the world, and then Chinese churches are the fruit of the works of those missionaries. And then the Lord used them to expand His kingdom in the midst of the Chinese people. So we're grateful, of course. And then we wanted to be able to know more about their works and how God used them, not necessarily to be able to do the same kind of work that they do, because God's calling in different generations may be different, but certainly we can learn from them in terms of how God called them and how they answered the call and how God sustained them in their works and in ministry. So we can certainly learn lessons and then be encouraged by that and to reflect upon our own calling in the works of missions, and how can we trust the Lord to continue to sustain us and if we answer that call. Okay, so that's the main purpose of holding this seminar. All right, so as far as I know, the plan is for Joe to do a general introductions about his work and some of his findings, and then he will narrow down to a particular family, a particular missionary family. And then we're fortunate to have two brothers from that family to be here this afternoon. So in the second part, and Joe will interact with the two brothers. Basically, let us just welcome Harry and Charles Lewis. And okay. And of course, we welcome Professor Scoble and his wife Jean, right? Jeannie, yeah. And I'm sorry, Mrs. Lewis. Norma. Yes. Welcome. And so let me just pray quickly for Joe, and then we can get on the way. All right. Gracious Father, we just want to thank you in a very special way today. For the cloud of witnesses that you have laid before us. And then these people, in the ways of how you use them, how you call them, and how they have been wonderful, faithful instruments in your hands, and that they become fruitful in the works of mission. So, Father, again, help us to be encouraged by that today as we see the old pictures and hear about the story about them, that our hearts may be led to contemplate and to respond to your call in the field of works of mission. So we pray that you would be with Brother Joe and in a very personal way, and sustain him and energize him and the way only you know how. And we also lift up Charles and Harry as they are also prepared to come and share their life stories. May your name be lifted up through their sharing, through their experience of how you work in their lives. We look to you for your grace to be manifested in this particular meeting. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. All right, Joe. Your time.
All right. Hi. My name is Joseph Ho, and I'm a PhD student at the University of Michigan. I'm very happy to see all of you today. It's an intimate group, but I hope it will make for good, just a good time of sharing and discussion, and I hope to hear many good questions also for the Lewis brothers and for me afterward. So I'm very glad to be here today. So my research in general looks at the photographs taken by American missionaries in China. And today, I will be going through about half a century worth of photographs. And again, there's a lot that it can't be told here. There are so many stories, so many ways that I've seen God working through the missions in China through the photographs, and also in the ways that I've interacted with the many families that I've gotten to know through this project. So it's been a wonderful experience. For those of you sitting on this side, I know that the sun is coming down through here, so since the talk is very heavily photo-based, it would be good if you could move into a place where there is shade so you can see them more clearly, so you're not kind of squinting the whole time through the sunlight. Thanks. All right. So, just to put the first slide up here, this is actually a lantern slide, an early form of projection slide, glass plate about this big, taken in 1891 in Taigu, Sanxi, by missionaries from Oberlin College, who went there as evangelists. So I just want to start it off with that. So the talk, the title is Modern China Through American Missionary Lenses, 1891 to 1949. So again, it'll be a kind of extended talk going through half a century. All right. So the question is, why study the photographs of missionaries? Why study American missionary photos? And I can give three reasons today. The first is that they represent missionary experiences, 他们代表 传道人的经验 and challenges, their 困难, the experiences that they went through, the reasons why they went, and what they literally and figuratively what they saw in China at the time. Photographs are also ways that missionaries shared information. So we think about the body of Christ, and we think about the ways in which we imagine and we pray for and we support missionaries around the world. Missionaries in the early days, through photography, were able to do the same thing by transmitting information about their missions from place to place in the form of photographs. And finally, we can also see what is the developments in Chinese history, 历史变化, the ways that missionaries not only interacted with Chinese Christians on a day-to-day basis, but how in general they experienced the changes that happened in Chinese history across a very tumultuous and rather chaotic century. And we also may see what was important and meaningful for them in the way they imagined missions and the way they experienced missions for missionaries and for Chinese Christians who worked with them. So I'll go ahead and just kind of go through one case study I've been looking at is Oberlin College. They sent a lot of missionaries to China beginning in 1881, and I'll go through a set of photographs that they took there. And again, talking about the themes that I just mentioned in the ways that these photographs were important in representing missionary efforts. So one of the biggest challenges for missionaries to China was how to interact with Chinese culture. How do we make Christianity adaptable and understandable for Chinese people? And one of the first ways that missionaries did this was to dress up as Chinese. On the outside, we go there, we're interacting with the Chinese people, and how do we become closer to their culture? Well, we try to look like them. And overland missionaries early on to China, and including missionaries even earlier before that, Morrison and Taylor, in a way pioneered the way of dressing up as Chinese to reach the Chinese. And you can see in this picture here that these overland missionaries in Taiwan, Sanxi in 1891, are dressing up as a Chinese family in order to evangelize. And they would go out wearing these kinds of clothing in order to blend in more with the Chinese in their evangelistic efforts. Naturally, there weren't a lot of networks or transportation networks in China at the time. There were no major railroads. Roads were still primitive, and the easiest way of traveling was either by boat or by horse cart or on horse. So a lot of these missionaries went into the interior. After going into major treaty ports, they would go out into the interior on horse carts, carrying tracts, Bibles, anything that they needed to use in order to reach people in rural areas. And, of course, the early missionaries brought cameras with them, too, to document the difficulties of their travel into the interior. And here you see, again, overland missionaries in Taigu going out on an evangelistic trip by horse carts, carrying all they needed for their mission's work. And the landscape, as it is today, is very diverse, very rugged, and especially in Sanxi, with the soil and with the kind of dry climate, these are the kinds of physical conditions that the missionaries had to travel through in order to reach remote villages in parts of China, northern China. And it's interesting that you can see here in the lower right corner the shadow of the photographer who's making the picture. He's climbed up, probably taken a pause from his horseback riding or in his carriage and got out and taken his camera out to get a picture of the camel train that's passing by. And camels feature prominently in North Chinese culture and experience, especially with bringing coal and supplies. They were the primary modes of transport for heavy goods, even up until the late 40s. So in a way, if we're thinking about what was important for the missionaries, the people that they tried to reach, there was a wide age range in the people they tried to reach, ranging from children to the elderly. This is a photograph of a class that they put together at Taigu that later became the Mingxian Xueyuan, or the Mingxian School, run by Oberlin College. And just as we have VBS here, they too also had VBS, a Vacation Bible School, for children in rural areas and in cities. And another long-term experience the missionaries had was building relationships with Chinese families. And a lot of these people may have been people who were working for the missionaries as helpers or servants. Many of them were also new Christians who had come to the congregation, and they're documented in these photographs. And in a way, you can see these photos as the missionaries representing their relationships in visual form in these albums. And this is, a theme that we'll see throughout the missionary effort in China, is the building of relationships with families and the ways that they represent them also in photos. And this was, we're thinking about Chinese history and Chinese culture. This is a very different time. This was the Qing Dynasty in China. This man, who was a local official, actually became a zanglao, or a deacon, in the church for the early missionaries. And he's depicted here kind of sitting in the costume of an imperial mandarin. He's dressed in the robes of an official. But at the same time, he's also a deacon. So he's taking on a new identity. In addition to his previous identity as an official in the government, he's also a Christian and involved in the Christian leadership. And I'm not sure how clear it is for you to see, but at the bottom it says this man was martyred in 1900. So during the Boxer Uprising of 1900, the Yihe Tuan Yundong, there was a lot of unrest, and a lot of Chinese Christians were killed along with missionaries. And this man was ultimately one of them. And you see this a lot in missionary albums, that the albums later on become a way of remembering or commemorating the sacrifice of Chinese Christians or missionaries who went through violent times, such as the Boxer Uprising of 1900. And just as the physical hardships were very difficult for missionaries, for a lot of missionaries, they were too much for them in terms of their health. And this photograph shows a funeral of one of the missionaries who passed away in North China. Medical care was still not as advanced or not as widespread as it is even a couple of decades later. And missionaries, particularly older missionaries or children, often succumb to disease or other kinds of physical illness in very difficult environments. And again, you see in this picture that the community has come together to commemorate or to remember this person at their funeral. That's a mix of Chinese and American missionaries, and you can see that the American missionaries in the center are wearing Chinese dress, just like they were shown in the first photograph. So with the changes in Chinese history, we also get changes. We started to see changes in the missionary photographs. Here is one picture taken by the same group of Oberlin missionaries in 1912, the first year of the Chinese Republic. And you see that in the enlargement of the photo, which shows soldiers parading down the main street in Taigu Sanxi, there is the Wu Se Qi, or the five-colored flag, representing the first flag of the Chinese Republic. And with the coming of the Chinese Republic came changes also in the ways that missionaries interacted, in the ways that their projects or their evangelization changed, and we'll get to that in a little bit. Missionaries were also present at other major events in the in Chinese history. This is the funeral of the Empress Dowager Longyu Taihou in Beijing, photographed by an Oberlin missionary. And on the back of this photo is written in handwriting that modesty demanded the photographer stand well back of the camera. So the photographer had the camera set up on a tripod, and because the funeral was passing by, in order to be more respectful in a way, the photographer walked away and triggered the camera by a remote release to take this picture. So it's written on the back of the photograph that the photographer had to stand away from the camera to take this picture. And one thing that my professors tell me from time to time is that these photos are not found in other archives. They exist in missionary collections, in missionary schools, such as Oberlin, but have not been seen by other people because for a while missionary efforts in China were largely discounted by professional scholars as irrelevant or not something worth studying. So you see that now that there's more interest in missionaries, there's also this more and more people are finding these materials that are so valuable to Chinese history existing in missionary archives. Some of you might recognize the guy standing in the middle of this photo. And now this is, again, a lantern slide taken by missionaries in Sanxi. That man is Yuan Sikai, the first president of the Chinese Republic. And this is a color slide, hand-painted, taken in black and white and hand-painted. And also, these missionaries became a way that Americans were first exposed to not only Chinese culture, but Chinese politics. These slides were brought home back to Ohio and projected for students at Oberlin College, some of whom later on became missionaries themselves to China. So again, we see the changes in Chinese history as seen in missionary photographs. Missionary evangelization efforts also changed in a way. From going from the kind of direct, going out to villages and preaching, there was a great debate in the church over how to reach the Chinese people. And one of the ways that was provided by the Republic, or the change of China from being an imperial dynasty to a republic, was that nationalism became a very big deal for many Chinese people. And missionaries realized that one way to reach Chinese people was to reach them through the ways that they were becoming more nationalist, that they were the ways that they were becoming more aware of their kind of place in the modern world. And these photographs were taken by YMCA missionaries affiliated with Oberlin, who were trying to reach Chinese young people through athletics. So you see there's a basketball game going on the left slide and pole vaulting going on the right. And again, these photographs were taken to encourage more Americans back home in the United States to come to China to participate in these evangelization efforts that were expanding beyond the traditional way of going into the villages, preaching only, and then leaving, or staying in a mission station and then preaching from there. So it was diversifying in these missionary efforts. But of course, during this time, the mission, the gospel did not change. The way that the missionaries approached these efforts was still to use ways of reaching people to bring them to the gospel. So through YMCA activities, through youth movements, the missionaries were still pushing or trying to bring people to Christ through these diverse ways of evangelization. At the same time, while modernization was going on in different parts of China, many parts of China remained the same, as they'd always been for centuries. And you can see these in the photographs taken even in the 1920s. These are other color slides from the Oberlin group taken in northern China, that some things just don't change. And the missionaries still had to struggle with how to reach the Chinese on cultural terms, whether it was family, whether it was ancestral worship, or the kind of different religions, Confucianism, Buddhism, and in some parts of China, Islam. It was a very difficult challenging issue for many missionaries, how to interact with the Chinese on a cultural level. And in the end, just dressing like a Chinese did not cut it. It had to be more than that. It had to be reaching out on a personal level and also on a an intellectual, personal, and spiritual level on a day-to-day basis with the Chinese. You can see this in the photos too, that part of becoming more national or more modern, so to speak, was also changes in education system. So many missionaries went into education as a way to reach Chinese people. These photos were taken at the Mingxian Shuxiao, or Shuyuan, in Taigu, Sanxi. Also directed by Oberlin. The upper left is a chemistry lab that was built for Chinese students, and the bottom right is a library. So again, different ways of reaching Chinese people through education. This is a photograph, results of the plowing experiment. So agriculture, because much of North China was involved in agriculture, scientific methods were brought by missionaries for the purposes of increasing crop yield in northern China, and also bringing in students who could then also attend Bible classes, attend Sunday school, alongside their the more modern education methods. Missionaries in various ways were also came across or were involved in politics. Again, this was not equal among all missionaries, and some organizations or groups were more closely aligned with the government as opposed to others. The YMCA, for example, made a point of working closely with government leaders in establishing mission work in different parts of China, and some other groups were supported by Chinese politicians or had connections with Chinese politicians. For example, this photo actually shows the Chinese, later on, Minister of Finance, Kong Xiangxi, teaching a Bible class at a YMCA. So he himself was a Christian and for a while taught Bible studies at the Mingxian Shuxiao, Shuyuan, but later on became very influential in Chinese politics. So again, very unexpected ways that Chinese Christians became involved in government and missionaries became involved in politics, sometimes with not so good results, but that's a very complex story to be discussed later. Yes?
Can we ask questions?
Oh, yeah, of course.
How did they identify this man as
Xiangxi? How did they identify him? Oh, the missionaries had put together this summer conference. So this picture was taken as part of that conference. Yeah, he's the man on the far right, pointing at people. He's talking about the Bible. Yeah. I'm sorry? Yeah, that's Kong Xiangxi on the far right. And there's Kong Xiangxi again, about 18 years later, bringing this time Song Meiling and Jiang Jieshi to visit the Mingxian Xueyuan. So again, this is and Jiang Jieshi and Song Meiling were both committed Christians, and they were able to visit this school as part of Kong Xiangxi's connections with the school. And Kong Xiangxi was actually a pupil at the school when he was young. So later on, as he grew up, he became a big supporter of this of the school. And there's them again. It's hard to tell, but I put little arrows in, so you can see Kong Xiangxi on the left, Song Meiling in the middle, and Jiang Jieshi is entering the school gate. But the story of Chinese politics does take a different direction here, as only 3 years later, the Japanese invaded China and the Kangzan began, or the war against Japan. So that is actually a bigger topic that I won't be able to touch on as much today, but I do want to just kind of, again, using the Oberlin photographs, summarize the different ways that missionaries interacted with the Chinese people in their mission efforts in China. And now I actually have a little time to pause before I move on to the Lewis, the photographs taken by the Lewis family in China. So if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them. Right. Well, a lot of scholars look at missionaries and say that they were cultural imperialists, 文化帝国主义, that these were that the missionaries went to China to destroy Chinese culture, to oppress the Chinese in all sorts of different ways. But which is strange, because when you study history, you cannot make blanket statements about any people. And one of the very politically charged statements that came out of the 50s and 60s in Chinese studies was that missionaries were cultural imperialists, and therefore they weren't worth studying. But in a way, that wiped out not only the stories of many missionaries, but the stories of many Chinese Christians who were so deeply committed to the cause of Christ in China. So, but now that people are becoming more open about studying religion and history, it's better to talk, or it's easier to talk about missionaries committed to causes in China. Yeah, so that was one of the bigger reasons. Yes, that's right. So again, having the images available now that were collected by families or stored in missions archives and now are being unearthed, we can see not only how important the Chinese the Christian missionaries were in Chinese history, but also how the Chinese Christians and people were so closely aligned with the work that the missions were doing in China. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for specifically for Oberlin, it was a mix of students. They were people from the surrounding countryside, and later as the school got better and better, students from elsewhere could come and live at the school. So it was kind of a school started just for the local area, but later became good enough that it could attract attention from different places, and different people would come to the school. Well, we'll find out, because in December, I'm going to Fudan Dashi, in Shanghai, to give a similar talk on missionaries and missionary efforts and photography. So I'll let you know what response I get from them. Yeah. And I'm going to move... one more question before I move on. Yes.
Did it evolve into a bigger school? Did it become a college of... one of the 13 Christian colleges or something like that?
It later was absorbed into the Sanxi Agricultural College. So Mingxian Xueshao was very big in scientific agriculture, as you saw in the photograph. So in 1949, after the revolution, its faculty and the school grounds were merged into Sanxi Agricultural University, Nongye Dazhi. Yeah. So there are many photographs coming up with the Lewis family, so I do want to move on. And again, I'd be glad to take questions after this before the Lewis brothers come up to share. So in order to, I guess, to get into the shoes of one missionary family, we're going to be looking at the photographs collected by Dr. Ralph Charles Lewis in China between 1933 and 1941. So here we see Dr. Lewis, Mrs. Lewis, and this is Roberta Taylor Lewis, and Harry Lewis, who is here with us today, sitting by his parents. This photograph was taken. You'll be seeing a lot of family photos today, so just be forewarned. There'll be many cute pictures of the Lewis family. Oh, yeah, I'll get to that in a minute. Yeah. So Ralph Lewis was an avid photographer and took many pictures of his family while he was in China. He was born and raised in California, along with his wife. Both of them were raised in California, and Dr. Lewis attended Occidental College, and then for a while worked for the Scripps Institute, which later became UCSD, my alma mater, and then graduated with a medical degree from Stanford. During this whole time, he really wanted to become a medical missionary in China, so that was his long-term goal, was to become a medical missionary in China. Oh, there's Harry again. Harry Lewis, born August 1931. And again, to think about the ways that these pictures were taken, Dr. Lewis was using a Rolleiflex camera, which is one of the two that I brought today, or these are both Rolleiflex cameras. And what he's doing in this picture is that he's taking a photograph, looking through the viewfinder of the camera, which is done like this. So you wind the film like so, and then you take the picture this way. So that's what he's doing in that picture there. And you're free to go up and take a look at these cameras afterwards if you like. Dr. Lewis took many photographs during his time in China, and they are all preserved in these very interesting photo albums in which they're kind of pasted together with cloth, and the cloth is very fragile. So for the past summer, I've been digitizing these photos with permission from the Lewis brothers, the Lewis family, four siblings, and working on them, cataloging them. So this is what I do. I have a digital camera. I've been photographing these one by one. And there are probably 600 of these photographs bound into six different albums, and there were possibly more, but I'll get to that in a second. Today, we'll be looking at the experience of the Lewis family through one photo album of the many that he produced, that Dr. Lewis produced during his time in China. And this is a notebook that was meant for writing, but it's about this big, and it covers the years 1934 to 1937 in Hanyang, Hunan. And just we'll be kind of looking through this album page by page. I've skipped a couple pages because there's so many. But here we have Dr. Lewis and the people that he worked with in Hanyang, or at the time as known, Hangzhou. The families who lived in the mission compounds in China generally had houses that looked a lot like American houses that were furnished in American ways. But they were also surrounded by Chinese people, and they were in the middle of these cities. In particular, this photo on the bottom right was taken from the porch of the house in Hangzhou, where Dr. Lewis worked. And Dr. Lewis was a surgeon, occasionally also performed dental work, which was very scary for him, that he writes in his memoirs, that dental work scared him, being a surgeon and not a dentist. But he was employed as the mission doctor for the American Presbyterian Mission Board in Hanyang. He and his family, including Harry Lewis, arrived in China in 1930, whereupon they went to Beijing for language studies. Oh, 32, 33, I'm sorry. They arrived in China in 1933 for a language study at the Beijing Union Language School, the College of Chinese Studies. And throughout their time in China, the Lewises kept practicing their Chinese. They had Chinese language teachers helping them, language being one of the big ways that missionaries tried to reach out to the Chinese by speaking to them, by understanding them with their own language. Again, photographs of VBS. This is the VBS at the Hanyang Church in 1934. And just as we have this missions conference this weekend, They were also doing weeks of evangelism in the church. So the bottom left photo shows a group that went out, Chinese Christians going out from the church to evangelize during the week of evangelism in Hangzhou. And just because you were a doctor employed by the American Missions Board did not mean that you just did medical work. A lot of the doctors were also heavily involved in evangelism. They were very committed, very strong Christians who made a point of reaching out to people with every chance they had. Here's a photograph of the missions group at Hangzhou, Hunan. And the photograph on the right shows a memorial service for a missionary who died in Oklahoma. And again, as I was mentioning earlier about the ways that photographs became a way that missionaries transmitted information from place to place, a missionary went on leave back to the United States and died in a car accident. And because his body was in the United States, the Chinese Christians held a memorial service for him thousands of miles away in China, and commemorating the life of service that he had for the missions church there. And this is a photograph showing him his memorial service in Hangzhou. Dr. Lewis was a very, very good photographer. Even though he had no professional training in photography, but the way he documented the environment, the people around the mission station is very remarkable. Again, these photographs have not been seen by anyone outside of the family until now. Oh, and going back to the one on the top right, that's actually the Yuehan Tielu being built through Hangzhou from Hankou to Guangdong. So this was, again, documenting ways that the missionaries were coming across different pivotal points in Chinese history, one of them being the building of railroads through major cities in China. Here are photos of Cecil Lewis, who was born in March 1935. And there's Harry with Cecil. So this is the house that the Lewises moved to in Shunde, Hebei. So because when Harry was young, he often suffered from different kinds of childhood diseases. And one of the major reasons why the family decided to move to Shunde was to leave the climate in Hunan, which was very difficult on Harry. And as a result, Harry is here today with us. And more than that, they were able to reach different groups of people. So they went from Hangzhou to Shunde in 1935. And this is the house that the Lewises lived in at the mission compound in Shunde, which also exists today. So this is the house that I got to visit in 2011 when I visited Xingtai, which is the current name of the city. And that's the house that we saw in the photo here. It hasn't really changed much. They kept it. It's now a clubhouse for veterans of the PLA. This is the hospital that Dr. Lewis served in as doctor and surgeon, the Grace Talcott Hospital, or the Fuying Yuan, the Gospel Hospital in Shunde, Hebei, around 1935. Again, what's remarkable about this picture is that it's actually two pictures that Dr. Lewis has merged in the dark room to create a panoramic. They're two individual square photos that he did, putting them together. Before Photoshop, this is what you did, and he did a pretty good job of it. These are more scenes from Shunde, the bottom right being an evangelistic meeting held in the city center for the surrounding neighborhood. You can see on the bottom left, the women's ward in the hospital. And the hospital building actually exists today as well, although it's now a Chinese restaurant. A Chinese restaurant. Part of the mission's work for Dr. Lewis was not only staying in the mission station and ministering to people coming there, but also going out to the countryside to conduct country clinics. And the missionaries, much like their counterparts in 1891, would go out from their compounds bringing with them medical equipment, this time riding bicycles instead of horses. You can see the bicycle kind of propped down on the ground in this photo here outside of Shunda. And they would ride out with their medical supplies, with Chinese evangelists, and conduct essentially constant but short-term medical missions in different villages outside of Shunda. And similar to what we do here at what we do in at Rancho Agua Viva, REV, you would have the missionaries come in with their medical team, set up this kind of clinic for the people, and that at the same time, the people waiting to be seen at the with the doctors would have a Chinese evangelist come to them and explain the Bible, explain principles of Christianity, and interact with them and talk with them as part of this mission's outreach. And here is the Chinese evangelist preaching to the Chinese people at Pingxiang, which is a little village outside of Shunda, 1935. And we can see at this time that the relationships that the Chinese people had, the missionaries had with the Chinese people in the 1890s had evolved into a more solid network of Chinese Christians moving towards an independent church. And one of the biggest questions in the 1930s and 1920s was, should the Chinese church be independent? When would there be a time when missionaries would no longer have to go to China? And by many accounts, many missionaries were split over the issue of whether to leave or allow the Chinese church to grow or to continue to be involved. And as we know, in 1949, a decision was made for them by the changes in Chinese history. But at the point that this picture was taken, the Chinese church as an independent body was already growing very strong, many in number, and working together with the missionaries in their efforts in these areas. And I don't think you'll see this in China today, but here is a poster painted on a wall outside the church compound, which explains basically the principles of salvation. The man taking off his old clothes, taking off the sinful nature and putting on the new self in this photo here painted on a wall outside the church. And people passing by would be able to see this poster or this painting. And the intent was to ask questions or for these people to be interested and then come to the church to know more about what these people are doing. And going back, I love Dr. Lewis's photographs because he had a remarkable way of taking pictures of people. The pictures I've seen in the albums, his interaction with the people he's taking pictures of is very different from what you might think of Western photographer taking pictures of Chinese people. There's a warmth that comes out in the photographs in the way that Lewis photographed them. I'm not sure what he did to make them smile, especially the Lao Nai Nai in the picture there, but the fact that there was a relationship built and it comes through in these photographs. And you can see more of them here. The woman on the right side in the photograph is a Chinese evangelist who worked with the Lewises. And the people on the left are a missionary family. And I don't have the notes for them, but I hope to find... Oh, anyway. And during the summertime, when the heat got... when it got very hot in the mission stations, the missionaries sometimes had time to go out to take a breather, to relax, because missions work... was very intensive and all-consuming, so they had some time to go out to a place called Beidaihe, which is in Hebei. And these are photographs taken by Dr. Lewis at Beidaihe. The Lewis family was at Beidaihe when the Japanese invaded in 1937, and we'll get to that more in a minute. Yes, Harry. Right, because many of these doctors could not leave their stations for too long. So the families might go there, and then the parents would travel back and forth. Right. And there were, Harry was just mentioning here that there were a lot of homes built by missionaries for the residences in Beidaihe, some of which still exist today. Right. So the appropriation of these houses, I mean, this is a very detailed story, and I know I'm leaving out a lot of details, but when my dissertation is published, maybe you can read more about them. So, yeah. This is another photograph taken by Dr. Lewis at Beidaihe, 1936. Oh, and in December of 1936, Ralph Charles Lewis Jr. was born. Charles Lewis, who is here. here he is. In total, the Lewis family had four siblings, Harry, Cecil, Charles, and Wendy. And Wendy is being held by Dr. Lewis in this photo here. And this this photograph was probably taken in 1940 or 1941. So as we know, those of you who are familiar with Chinese history, the Japanese invaded North China in 1937, July of 1937. For a time, the family left China and came back after the situation had calmed down a bit to continue running their mission because Americans were not at war with Japan and were considered a technically neutral country at the time. The missionaries were allowed to continue their missions work in China. And as you can see the photo on the upper right, many missions took in war refugees, and you can see that the courtyard of the mission compound is filled with people who are celebrating Christmas with the missionaries. In some cases, Japanese Christians who were part of the Japanese army also came to celebrate major holidays with the missionaries. And I believe the photograph taken here in 1939 shows a Japanese Christian officer who had come to visit the Lewises in their mission compound. The Lewises and many missionaries are also talented musicians. So there's Dr. Lewis playing the trombone and Mrs. Lewis playing the cello. And Mrs. Lewis also translated the Messiah into Chinese for Easter. Christmas? Or was it Christmas? Oh, I'm sorry. For Christmas. Eventually, the Lewis family was separated by the war. The family, because of the situation in China, Dr. Lewis sent his four children and his wife back home to the United States in May of 1941, if I have that date correctly, and where they stayed for the remainder of the war. Dr. Lewis remained in China, in Shunde, continuing his medical work with the Chinese there. And subsequently, he was put under house arrest in December 1941, when the United States went to war with Japan. He and a nurse and two evangelists were put under house arrest in this one of the houses on the mission compound and was not permitted to continue his work. But again, his memoirs talk about the relationship that had already been built with the Chinese. On the first day that they were interned, in the evening, he could see on the ridge outside Chinese people processing by with their hands folded as a sign to the missionaries who had been interned inside the compound, that they were praying for them. And even though there were guards posted at inside this house with Dr. Lewis and his fellow missionaries, they tried to build a relationship with the Japanese guards, talking to them the limited Chinese or English that they knew throughout the time that they were interned. And there's one, the memoirs also talk about this one experience when one Easter morning, March of 1941, March 1942, that the church bells suddenly started ringing, and they had been not permitted to ring the church bells for a long time. And the small group of missionaries went downstairs and found their guards were gone. So almost like the story of Paul coming out of the prison, they rushed out into the church in time to find that the Chinese service had been restarted and that they were able to worship with the Chinese people again. Of course, the guards caught up to them. Oh, what are you doing here? But they also sat down, and Dr. Lewis writes that they didn't know what to do, so they sat down with the people and attended the worship service along with everyone else. So, again, these relationships were very deep, and you can see these not only in the photographs, but in the testimonies that many of these missionaries gave. Unfortunately, there are not a lot of photographs from this time, 42, because when Dr. Lewis was transferred to the Weixian internment camp, the Japanese tore up most of his photographs. So we don't have any pictures from this time. Only those that were sent back with his family or preserved in other ways before then. Dr. Lewis, in 1943, was sent to the Weixian internment camp in Shandong, where he met Tom Scoville's dad, Dr. Fred Scoville. And they had known each other before and were reunited at the camp. Dr. Scoville was working in Shandong, Dr. Lewis in Hebei. And in the camp, they served together as the camp doctors. Malnutrition was was a big problem for many people. Diseases. The camp was generally all right, but there was always the threat of epidemics or disease with bad sanitation. So they served as doctors in the internment camp, where many missionaries and other foreigners of different nationalities were interned until they were repatriated in 1943. And again, that is a story that will take a lot longer time to tell. As full of difficulties and very challenging experiences, but Dr. Lewis records in his memoirs that his faith held him secure through these very difficult times at the Weixian internment camp. And of course, many of the missionaries often expressed that even though their conditions were very difficult in the camp, they often wondered how worse it was for Chinese Christians living outside the camp who were subjected to the violence and the deprivations of war outside the camp in other parts of China. So it's 5 p.m. now, and I'll wrap up just very quickly with some final photos from the Lewis family in post-war and communist China. I'm still working on this part of the project, and it turns out that Dr. Lewis took something around 200 color slides in China at this time, and I'm still trying to put together their history in the post-war period, and I'm hoping that Harry and Charles will have an opportunity to share more details about this experience in a moment. After Dr. Lewis was repatriated to the United States, the war ended, World War II ended in August 1945, and almost immediately, many missionaries tried to get back to China to restart or to continue their missions work. Many of them had left behind Chinese colleagues, other personnel that they were very close to in the mission stations, and they went back to restart their missions. Dr. Lewis went back for a time, was in Beijing, and was in Shanghai as well. In Shanghai, he worked sorting a lot of medical supplies that were surplus from the United States Army that were now being given to China for use by U.S. aid in China. And these are photographs that were taken in Shanghai at the time. Well, again, remarkable about the photographs. There are many well-preserved color slides from this time period. Dr. Lewis must have bought a 35-millimeter camera sometime before going and made color slides of Shanghai in 1948. Yes, that's right. The man on the right side in the photo is bargaining for, I guess, the geese that's sitting in the basket there. And I was able to enlarge some of the road signs in the left photo, and we've identified where that street section is. It's still a street corner in Shanghai on the corner of Guangdong Lu and Guangxi Lu, and it's currently occupied by a convenience store and a cosmetic shop, where the guys in the photo of 1948 is cutting dabing. Here we are, doumiao, selling doumiao. And you can see the youtiao in the back. Again, remarkably well preserved, and these slides really capture a part of China at a very pivotal moment as the Chinese Civil War was really building up in the north, and the future of China was very uncertain, what would happen with the government, with the people, and hoping that the remainder of the time here, we can hear more about this period from Harry and Charles as they share. And finally, there's me with the Lewis siblings. We had a wonderful conversation for the first time July 4th of 2011, and many parts of this project. Every photograph you see here came out of a suitcase that was loaned to me at that family reunion, which I'm just finishing work on now. 2 years. Yeah. All right, so we have a couple minutes. We can take a break before the Lewis siblings come up. Or if there are any questions I can answer the next couple minutes, I'd be glad to do so. Thank you for listening. Yes.
Want to comment at all about what some of that reasons might be? I know it's a little bit outside the scope.
Okay, yeah, sure. So the question was about the state of Christianity in Japan at the time. So then as now, Christianity was not as strong in Japan as China. There was a strong or an active missionary group working in Japan from different denominations. In fact, on the ship to China, the Lewis family met many missionaries that were on their way to Kobe and other places in Japan to work on to participate in missions there. And I can't speak to exactly why the Christianity was not as strong in Japan, but I can venture a guess that Japan did require everyone to adhere to an official religion. Shinto was propagated very strongly in Japan, especially by the government. And so missions were not as flexible or as encouraged as they were in China. So that was one of the major reasons. But there were Japanese Christians, and many missionary accounts do talk about Japanese Christians coming to worship with the Chinese and with the Americans in missions in China when they were there as, quote-unquote, invaders. But one missionary wrote, after seeing a service in which there were Japanese Christians, Chinese Christians, and Americans, isn't this like the kingdom of heaven? So, just to put that anecdote out there. I guess we can take a couple minutes break and get together again in a few minutes, and we'll have the Lewis siblings share with us their experiences. So, thanks again.